Begin the current Daf Maseches Bamitzia Daf Kuf Tezayin. Begin 6 lines down from the top of the Amud. The Gemara continues the discussion of the previous Daf, and that is we had in the Mishnah in the previous Daf that qualified, although there's a general prohibition, which is qualified, that one is not allowed to take a mashkin from a borrower in when he defaults on the loan and he can't pay up. However, there are certain qualifications for that halacha. Then besides that, there are, which our two previous Mishnah I spoke about, two unique, exclusive halachas that apply, one to the beggar of almana, the garment of a widow, and moreover, to take the person's rechaim v'rachav, which are the two parts, the upper and the lower part, of the person's mill, which is used to grind the grain. Now, additionally, the Mishnah said that each one is actually considered as a separate kli, and each one would have its own separate violation. So if you take the whole mill, the top and the bottom part, you're violating two negative prohibitions for two sets of lashes. Now, there's a machlekes in the Gemara between Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda regarding if someone takes either one of the parts or two of the parts, does he only violate the issa of Rechaim V'Rachav, or does he also violate what the end of the pasuk says because he's taking his nefesh, which the Mishnah said that comes to include all things of Eichel Nefesh, not only a mill, but anything that helps in the production of food because that's the person's soul, that's what provides the sustenance of the body. Rav Huna held that besides violating Rechaim and Rachiv, you also violate the general prohibition, and you get a lashish for that, because he's taking Nefesh Uchevel, he's taking away the person's soul. Rav Huna said that no, since that's a general category, that comes to include other things, but for Rechaim and Rachiv, they only have their specific Isser, which is mentioned in the Torah. And that argument continues as Tanya Kavaseid Rav Yehuda. We have a brisa that supports the opinion of Rav Yehuda that you're not going to get a separate lashes if let you take the Rechaim or the Rachav or both Rechaim and Rachav. You get for the Rechaim and the Rachav for the different parts of the mill, but you're not going to get an additional lashes, meaning if you're going to take, let's say, both Rechaim and Rachav, you're going to get just two, not three sets of lashes. What's the proof? The brisa says as follows. Chaval Zug Shel Tzapar. Someone takes as collateral a pair of scissors, meaning a scissors of a barber, which are made up of two parts, that's what they're called, a pair of scissors. But each part of the scissor is a separate knife, it's a separate tool. When you take the scissors together, then that produces the activity of a scissor, which is essentially the same thing as a Rechaim and Rachav, where each one is a separate kli, but the way the mill works is that you have upper part and lower part, and that's how it helps in the grinding process. So says the Bryce, if someone takes collateral, a pair of scissors, or the same idea is with some shalparis. He takes a yoke, shalparis, he takes a yoke of the cows, which is the same idea, in other words, where it's also made out of, the yoke is made out of two parts, says the Bryce of Chayiv Shtayim. So the person is going to violate two negative prohibitions. One is because each one has its, although these are not mentioned in the Torah, a yoke or a scissor, but each kli, each part of the scissor, or each part of the yoke, since there's two parts, is included in ki nefesh, that you're taking away the person's life. So although you need both parts to make one activity, and the same thing goes for the yoke, where if he takes these, what you do is you take two cows, and you put the yoke on both of them, and you need the whole yoke to work for one activity, but since each one is a separate kli, you're going to be violating two negative prohibitions by taking the whole yoke or taking the whole pair of scissors. Now, says the Braisa, Zeba Atzma, but Zeba Atzma lets you take only each part separately. You don't take the whole yoke, you take one part of it. Or you only take one of the blades of the scissor, then in the Chayav Alachas, then you'll only be violating one negative prohibition. You'll be violating it because each one is inherently an individual component, but you're not going to get two because that's only when you take both together. That's one brisa. Now, between Tanya Idach, now we learned another brisa, which is reflective, and that's why we need both of these brises, that teaches us that where do we know this halacha, the previous brisa, that we know it from Rechaim and Rachav, where we compare other things to Rechaim and Rachav, that because they're learned out from the same pasuk. The prohibition of taking collateral from the two parts of the mill, that end of the pasuk is what teaches us, ki nefesh uchevel, that you're not allowed to take anything that is related to the production of food, which is these, you take a blade of a scissor, of the barber, where you take the yoke, which these all could contribute towards nefesh types of things that provide for a person's sustenance. So how do we know that? This Bryce will illustrate we know that from Rechaim and Rachim, and then we'll be able to prove this halacha for Rav Yehuda. The Bryce says, Chaval Zug Shel Saparim, if someone takes collateral, a pair of scissors, or with some shalparis, or he takes the yoke of the cows. So, yochel lo yehi chayiv ala achas, you would think that the person would only be liable for one negative prohibition, because you took just one You took one thing, one scissor, one yoke. That's what Bryce teaches that no, it says in the Pasig, Le'yachvol Rechaim Barachim. In that same Pasig, which teaches us the Isra of taking something which is related to Oichel Nefesh purposes, it also says in the beginning of that Pasig that you should not take collateral, this the upper part of the mill, the lower part of the mill, and the upper part of the mill. Now, what that teaches us is as follows. Ma Rechaim Barachim, just like these two parts of the mill. Shehem Yuchadim Shnei Kelim. They're both distinct, they're two different kli, two different utensils. But together is when they go ahead and do one activity, and yet and one is liable for each one individually as a separate negative prohibition, and that's why the Torah explicitly specified to warn regarding each part of those kli, the different components separately. And it didn't just say a mill, it said rechaim barachim, the two different parts, that teaches you av kol dvarim, so to all other things. Shein shnei kelim miyuchadim, that they're two distinct kli, tools, meaning a scissor, you have two different blades, the yoke, you have two different parts, but yet v'oisim alocha achas, in spite of the fact that they do one activity, which is helping them plow, or when you go and cut something with it, chai v'azeh b'fnei asmei b'azeh b'fnei asmei, still you're going to be liable for each part independently. And that we know from Rechaim and Rachif. So this is the inference that proves Rabbi Yehuda's halacha. So obviously, if where do we know this halacha by these other things like a scissor? We know from the two parts of the mill that there also the halacha is going to be, by Rechaim Rachim, that there's going to be two negative prohibitions and the inference is, and not three, which is like Rabbi Yehuda. Because according to Rav Huna, the halacha is actually that you violate three things by Rechaim Rachim. Rechaim, Rachim, and the end of the pasuk, ki nefesh u'chayvel. From the fact that where do we know that there's two negative prohibitions and only two, by these other things, by scissors and the yoke. We know that from Rechaim Barachim. So if we're saying there's two by those things, obviously there's two by Rechaim Barachim, which is like Rabbi Yehuda. Now, Rashi wonders that seemingly, why do we bring in the first Brisa? Whatever we bring in from the first Brisa, we know from the second Brisa. We could have just only quoted the second Brisa. So Rashi says no. Had we only quoted the second Brisa, the words the second Brisa says is that, yeah, you'll be liable for each part individually. For each blade, let's say you take only one of the blades of the scissor, you'll violate each one. Now, the reason for that is because we don't go based on the activity that it does, but rather the kli, the components. If it's an individual kli, even though it works in tandem with something else, you violate each one independently. But if I only had the second Brisa, I could tell you, but there's still going to be a sum total of three sets of lashes. For example, like when you're learning it out from Rechaim Rachiv, for the Rachiv one, for the Rechaim one, and because of a Ki Nefesh, you'll be violating, which goes on both, a third set of lashes. Now that's why we needed the first Brisa, which explicitly says that the sum total of the lashes is only going to be two sets of lashes. That's what we learned out from the first Brisa, and that's why it wasn't enough for the second Brisa. The second Brisa is saying, yeah, each one individually, but maybe each one individually, and there's a third one, which would be like Rav Huna. That's why we need the first Brisa that says that, no, you're only going to be violating two negative prohibitions, not three, which teaches us like Rabbi Yehuda. Now, moreover, Rashi also wants to tell us not to have the gears of Tani Idach, we're learning another Brisa, which sounds like an independent idea, because Rashi says, actually, we only know what the Gemara wants to support Rabbi Yehuda from the combination of both Brises, and you wouldn't know it from one of them. Because if you only had, let's say, the first Brisa that says that Chayiv Beis, that you're going to only be liable for two sets of lashes when you take the two blades of the scissor and not three, but that even Rav Huna actually agrees to. Because where do you know this from, that there's Isser by taking the two blades of a scissor? They're not written in the Pasuk. Rechaim Barachav written in the Pasuk. Scissors or yokes are not. You know it from Ki Nefesh U'Chayvel. Now, therefore, this Ki Nefesh U'Chayvel is going on each kli of the scissor. So that would, of course, be only two. You wouldn't have three. It's only from the combination of the second Brisa together with the first Brisa, because now the second Brisa is telling us that, no, we know it from a comparison to this the Rechaim V'Rachiv. And so if we're saying that there's only two by the scissors, again, which even Rav Huna essentially would agree to. But the second Brisa is telling us that where do we know that from Rechaim V'Rachiv? Which is making the comparison that just like in the first Brisa, we tell you there's only going to be two. Where do we know that from? Says the second Brisa, we know that from Rechaim V'Rachiv, where there also is only going to be two sets of lashes, which is like Rabbi Yehuda, not like Rav Huna, who says you're going to get three sets of lashes, one for Rechaim, one for Rachiv, and one for Ki Nefesh U'Chayv. Now the Gemara brings a story related to these halachas that we were mentioning from the previous stuff. Hahu gavra dechavol sakina da'ashkavta mechavri. Regarding a certain individual that took collateral the knife of a butcher, which they use to cut up the pieces of meat. So Azlaka made Abaye, came in front of Abaye. Amalei, so Abaye told him, Zila Hadri, you have to give this security, this collateral back to the borrower. To have a leg kli, sho'isam bo'echel nefesh, because this knife is something that's used in the production of food. And as we mentioned in the previous daf, that is not allowed for the, that's part of this that we're saying, ki nefesh u'chayvel, you cannot take collateral of something that's used for echel nefesh purposes. Moreover, Abaye said, v'su kum bedin ala, and then you have to go back and litigate against him. That is, if let's say the guy's going to say, okay, I admit to you, or if you have witnesses, let's say, that can prove it, then he'll have to pay you. But if not, then he could just make a shvuas hesus, he could take a rabbinic oath, and he could exempt himself. In other words, the fact that you took the knife doesn't put you in any more superior position, because you have no right to take the knife. It's oichel nefesh purposes, you got to give that back, and then you have to prove that he owes you the money. That's a bayah. Rav Amar, he said it no. He says that once the guy, although he wasn't supposed to, but once he already took that knife as collateral, moreover, there's no witnesses that show and prove that when he took it, he was taking it through the medium of collateral. Now, this guy could claim that he actually had bought the knife from that guy. So therefore, Rav said to him, you don't have to now go ahead and create a new litigation against him to go ahead and fight him now from anew and prove that he owes you money. Because once you acquired the collateral, albeit again that you shouldn't have taken it, now you have the opportunity to swear and to take, meaning, now you could go ahead and claim that the loan that he owes you, up and at least till the value of the knife that you had taken of collateral, because now you're holding on to it. If you wanted to, you would have a meager and say, wait a second, look, I have this knife. I could say that I bought this from you, and you would have to disprove that. No one here saw me that I took it through the medium collateral. And whoever's holding onto metatlin usually is the mufsik, could say that it's mine, and I could say I bought it from you. And then this knife, which lets it worth $100, then for sure you have to pay me up from the loan worth $100. Not like Abaye, who said, no, you give it back, and then you have to try to prove him. Now that's the other way around, according to Rabbi, who said, no, for sure up to $100 worth of the knife, I have the rights. Beyond that, fine, that I have to prove, but since I'm holding onto the knife, I could say I bought it. On that, the Gemara asks, does Abaye not hold that svara that, like Rav is claiming, that since he already took the knife, he could claim that he bought it, so although he has to give it back, but at least he should be able to demand at least the value of the loan, which is equal to that of the knife? But on that, as the Gemara, Maishno Mahani de Easy, why is it any different than the case of the following case with the goats? The Achli Chushla ben Arda, there were certain goats that ate peeled barley in Arda. Now, the owner of the peeled barley went and was upset that this guy's goats ate up his peeled barley. He went and he grabbed the goats, and he was claiming that the goats had eaten a lot of his peeled barley. Now, the father Shmuel had said, now, he could claim, since he's holding on to the goats, he could say, well, look, I'm taking this as collateral. You either pay me up for what I claim they ate, or I'll claim that I bought these goats from you. What am I doing holding on to them? And the father Shmuel said he's correct, that he could claim at least up until the value of the goats for the compensation of the peeled barley that he said that he ate. So why would Abaye disagree with Rav if we see from the father Shmuel that this is a agreed upon halacha? And that says the Gemara, no. Hasim over there, by the case of the father Shmuel, lav midi de avde le'ushli b'laguruhu. It's not the custom to rent out or to lend out a person's own goats. So therefore, that actually gives a superiority to the claimant, that he could say, what am I doing with these goats? You rented it to me, you lent it to me. No, people don't usually rent or lend out goats. So obviously, it would make sense. Why do I have it? Because I bought it from you. Meaning, in the case where there's no witnesses that could testify that he had taken it from the owner through the medium of collateral. So yeah, in that case, we believe him with that migu because he could have made such a claim. And therefore, although he's going to give it back, but he has to be compensated at least the value of the goats for the value of the barley that was eaten up. But on that says the Gemara, but Abaye would tell you, ha, over here in the case of the knife, midi da avad lo ushli b'laguruhu. It's something that people lend out. People will lend or rent out their knife. And therefore, since it could be lent out, therefore the guy can't claim, well, what am I doing with your knife? Obviously, I bought it. So believe me that when I'm saying you owe me a certain amount, because I could just claim I bought the knife, we don't believe it that you bought the knife. Why do you have his knife? Because he lent it to you. He rented it out to you. It's different than the case of the goats. As we find the Shalach Rav Huna Bar Avin, Rav Huna Bar Avin had said that Dvarm Hasuin Lahashu Lahasker, things which are common to lend out or to rent out, and the guy who has it now, which we knew up until now was someone else's thing. He said, what do you think I'm doing with this guy's stuff? It's because I bought it. Ainu Naman, he's not believed. We don't believe him. What are you doing with it? Because he lent it to you. People usually lend these stuff out. You just can't just claim it's yours. You would have to prove that you had bought it from that guy. Therefore, says Abai, that's the difference between the case of the goats, where people don't usually lend it out or rent it out. So then he has the migui. But in this case, I disagree with Rav. He doesn't have a migui, and therefore, we don't believe him. And since he has to give back the knife, because he's not believed to say that he bought it, he has to start over, and he has to try to prove the amount that's owed to him, not the way Rav is saying it. Now, the other Gemara asks, based on that answer, what, Rava lesley haisvar? And does Rava not hold of this logic that Abai just said? But v'harava apik zuga disarbala. Rava went and removed a pair of scissors that are used to cut wool, v'sifra da'agadita, and the book of Agadic teachings, miyasmi, from orphans. In other words, that the owner of this, the sefer or the scissors, brought witnesses that this was theirs. Now, why is it doing by these orphans? So the owner claims that they had lent it to the father. And what did Rava do? Rava removed it from the orphans. And why? Because bidvar masun lahash lahaskar. These are things that people usually normally lend out. People lend out a pair of scissors or a book, and the orphans saying, no, you can't take away metalton from your son. They say, what do you want? We owned this. We lent it to your father. And Rava removed it from them. Now, if it would be true that the person could claim, no, what am I doing with it? Obviously, I bought it. Then by the orphans, even when they wouldn't make such a claim, the halach is we, the court, stand up for the orphans, and we would make such a claim. So obviously, Rava himself agrees to this principle, that when it's dvar masun lahash lahaskir, that we don't taina lukua chubiyadi. So how do we understand Rava's halach over here? If a knife is something that's normally lent out and rented out, so even Rava should hold of that logic that we cannot say anymore, oh, then I could claim I bought it. You're not believed to say you bought it. We know that it was lent out or rented out to you. So therefore he has to return it. He should have to start over. Why does Rava say that? He could say, I could have said I bought it, and therefore at least be compensated according to the value of that mashkin. So that the Gemara says, Amalcha Rava. Rava would tell you that no, a butcher's knife is different. Hainam here also, kiven de mifkema, since it could get nicked, kapti in shivulei mushli. People are particular, and they don't lend out a butcher's knife, and therefore that goes back to things that are not asun lahash lahaska, the way the case of a father the Shmuel by the goats, where they're not usually lent out, then the person is believed to say, I could have said I bought it, and therefore, although he has to give it back, he could be compensated at least according to the value of that, and that's why Rabbi disagreed with Abai. Hanulach Makabel, we shall return to the 9th parak of Masechta Bava Metzia, parak of Makabel. With that, we turn to Amud Beis and begin the 10th parak of Masechta Bava Metzia, parak HaBayis Vali, which continues on this general theme regarding interpersonal relationships in monetary law. Now, these Mishnayos focus on more real estate in the sense of HaBayis Vali, that's the name of the parak, regarding the ground floor and the second story of that building, which is called the Bayis. Ground floor and Aliyah is the attic or the second story, which this Mishnah focuses on, Shalshnayim, that's owned by two different people. So for example, let's say two brothers split their father's house. One took the ground floor and one took the second story. Now, what's important to understand is that that makes the bricks of the wall from the ceiling of the ground floor, that is the floor of the second story going up. So the upper part is the stones of the upper person. Now from there and below are the bricks that are belong now and owned by the ground floor. Meaning whatever is part of their apartment is those bricks and wood, that's owned by them. Now the significance of that comes up in Shenaflu. Let's say the house collapsed and now it's a pile of rubble. So on that says the Mishnah, Shneim Chalkin, now they both divide, Be'etzim Uva'avonim Uva'afer. They split in the wood, the bricks, and the dust. All this debris. Now, obviously, as Rashi points out, it's according to the height. And according to what each one's higher than the other, proportionately, whatever the proportion of the amount, if it was 50-50, then it's 50-50. One apartment is 60% of the building, the other one's 40. That's how you divide it. But that's, you make the bricks and the earth, if one of them is more than the other, that's how you're going to divide it. Now, the reason why it's divided like this, proportion to how much they had, is because it's not recognizable which are the bricks from the upper story, which are the bricks from the lower story. If we knew which ones are which, then they would each take. Since we don't know, then we go proportionally however much their apartment was, and then they divide whatever was here in the collapsed building. Moreover, says the mission of V'royim Eilu Avonim HaSuyis L'shtaba. We also evaluate and we look which bricks were the one that should have been the ones that broke. In other words, if let's say there are certain bricks that broke in half. Now, each one is wants to say, they're saying that the whole ones are mine, and the other one's saying, no, the whole bricks are mine. So we evaluate the bricks to see which ones would have made sense to be the ones that would have broke, the upper story or the ground story. And it depends on how the building collapsed. And that is, if it collapsed from its foundation and it just crumbled going downward in its place, then obviously you know that what had broke were the bricks of the lower story. And that's why the building fell down like that, because its foundation, which was in the first floor, collapsed and then everything fell down on top of that. If let's say the building fell like a stick, like a rod going from top to the outer area, which it went like a stick falling down, then it's obviously what happened was that the bricks of the upper story fell forward. So that would make sense that the ones that broke, which was from the greater distance, was the upper story's bricks. And that if they broke, makes more sense from the greater height, it's going to have the more gravity, it's going to break the upper ones, but the lower ones would make sense that they're the whole ones, because that fell from a lower height than the upper ones. So we evaluate to see which ones are the whole ones, which ones are the broken ones, to say who's going to get whole and who's going to get broken. Now the Mishnah continues, let's say one of the two parties recognized parts of his bricks, and they recognize that those are the whole ones, and I know that's from my story, then so he takes those because he recognizes it, and it goes and is calculated towards the calculation of how they divide the remaining bricks of the building, which the other person takes correlating to that which he's taking, which he recognized from himself, which the Gemara is going to explain. What do we mean the other one takes correlating to these whole bricks that he's recognizing it? Does the other one take whole ones correlating to his whole ones, or does it actually come off the calculation of the broken bricks? Now, the Gemara first asks on the Mishnah, Medigtani Rain, from the fact that one of the halachas the Mishnah taught us was that we evaluate, we see whose would have made more sense to break and which ones would have made more sense to be the whole ones, says the Gemara, Machlal, the Ikkel Mekam Alayu. Obviously, is that we could ascertain regarding how the building collapsed to know if it fell in the way of that it just collapsed from beneath, and that is obviously that means to say that the lower bricks were the ones that broke, or if it fell like a rod collapsing like a tower falling down, which is that obviously that the upper bricks are the ones that broken. So Ihachi asked the Gemara, if that's the case that you could ascertain how a building collapsed, so Reisha Mai Chalken, then why does the beginning of the Mishnah say that, oh, so we divide accordingly the bricks, the wood, and the dust? Nachsi, let's see. If it fell in the way of like a rod, like a stick, like from top to bottom, obviously we know that it's the upper bricks that broke, and therefore let the upper story have to take from the more distant bricks. And if it fell from the bottom, well then Tasyasa Itfra. Then obviously that is the lower bricks that broke. And then again, let the upper ones, according to those who say Rashi has a different girsa, but either way, let the upper story have to take from the further distance whether they're whole or broken. So if you could ascertain it, then why are we saying you split it? Just let we know which area is which. We know which ones are the broken ones and the whole ones. Why do we split it? Says the Gemara, you're right. There are times that you could ascertain. But Leitzricha, the ratio of the Mishnah is talking about, Dinafa Belelia. So although you could bring in the professionals, they could tell how it collapsed, and then you'll know what the resolution is. But here's talking about where it fell in the nighttime. Now, so the Gemara says, but the Lechazin B'tzafa. So look in the morning, then you could see it then. So the Gemara says, no, by the time the morning came around, Defaninu. They already had cleared away the debris. So you can't tell anymore. Professionals come and say, you guys tampered with the evidence, we can't tell anymore. So the Gemara says, what's the problem? Belechzim man paninu b'leshayle. Go find out who's the one, who is that officer that was there, cleared away the debris, and ask him. And then you could ascertain based on his reporting. So the Gemara says, no, defaninu b'nei rishus haram. It's talking about where the people from the public, some random strangers who are walking by, they cleared away. The Azlama, they already left. You don't know who it was. They cleared it up to ask them for the data to be able to ascertain how the building had collapsed. And that's why you divide it. But then the Gemara asks a different question. There's a different way we should divide it, not non-dependent on ascertaining how it fell. V'lechzi b'shus d'man yasmin. Look in whose area the bricks fell. V'lahavi idacham v'itzimech aver l'varayah. You're right, it's a suffix. And generally, when you have a suffix in moment, you're going to chalken, and that's the halach of the Mishnah. But find out which area the bricks are in right now, and then that person becomes a muchzik, because it's in his domain. And then anytime you have a doubt, and the other one wants to remove it from him, it's incumbent upon him to bring the onus of the proof. So why are we saying we split it? Let's see whose reshus it fell into. So the Gemara says, Lo yitzricha, no, the yasrin b'chatzit t'tavayu. It's talking about where the bricks fell into the courtyard, which is shared by both of them, so neither one of them is a mochzik. or inam, or you could say bishus haram, the bricks fall into the public domain, which also neither one are a muchzik. Or v'yibay same, if you want, you can say a third approach that shutvin b'chihai gavna lekapte adadi, that partners in such a situation, they're not particular on each other to say that as if one of their domains are going to acquire it for him, because actually, although yes, this is my part of the courtyard and that's your part of the courtyard, but each one is easy about his property, and he lets his friend put in his objects in his domain. You live on the top floor, I live on the bottom floor. Okay, you know, we share our areas. So therefore, what the third approach in the Gemara is saying is, even if it fell into the domain of one of theirs, the other one would not be considered a moitzi mechavere, because that person's property is also considered his property, because neither one are particular about lending their area for the other person, and therefore it's considered both of their domains. So therefore, that wouldn't be allowing us to ascertain, to say, how we're going to divide it depends on who's his rishus have fell into, either because it's a shared area or rishus haram, or even if it's one of their areas, but it's not particular, so it wouldn't make the other one mitzvah mechavel avaraya. And that's why the halacha, the Rish, the Mishnah says, since we couldn't ascertain, because they already cleared it away and we don't know who the people were, the halacha is going to be chalk, and they're going to split it again, either evenly or proportionately to whatever the amount of bricks each one had. Now the Mishnah continued and said, if one of them recognized his bricks, recognized these whole ones are mine, so then the Mishnah said, then he could take those bricks, and that is calculated towards the cheshbon of the rest that they're supposed to divide, which we're unsure about. Now that the Gemara asks, v'halo ma'atoin, what is the other guy claiming? When this guy's saying, oh, I recognize these are mine, and we say, okay, you could take it, and we'll divide and we'll take that into the calculation of the rest. What is the other guy claiming? And that is, either come in, if the other guy's saying, yes, you're right, I recognize those are your bricks. Well, then Peshitta, obviously, if they both agree, what would the Mishnah be telling us that he could take it? And and if the other guy is not saying yes, well then lama naitl, how could he take just because he claims? Who are you? You have two witnesses. How can you take just because you claim and the other guy's denying that? Elad Amalei rather says the Gemara, it's where the other guy says any day. Says I don't know. You're saying it's yours. I don't know. That's the halacha of Bari B'Shem and Bari Adav, where one party is claiming, definitely, I know this is mine, the other guy is claiming, I don't know. Then the definite claim is better, and that's why he could take those whole bricks for himself. That has the Gemara. If that's the case, that should then be a refutation of the opinion of Rav Nachman, which this is taught in a few different places in Shas, that if someone says, it says, there's a mana of mine in your hand, you owe me a certain amount of money. The defendant says, I don't know, I do owe you, I don't recall. Rav Huna, Rav Yehuda, Amichai, they say that the defendant is liable to pay because of what's called Bari Adav. Since the other guy is definite and this guy's not sure, so the definite claim is better than the maybe claim, and therefore he has to pay. Rav Nachum, Rav Yechon, Amipata, they say that no, the defendant is exempt from paying. Why is he exempt? The other guy's definite and he's not sure. It's because of what's called Uki Mimonim Cheskis Mari. Ultimately, the guy is in possession of his money. The other one is trying to be meitzi the mamon mechaveri. We say the muchzik retains his chazaka. He has to swear that he doesn't know, but as long as we know for sure that he doesn't know, he doesn't have to pay until the claimant brings definite proof, like witnesses or something like that. So one thing we see is that from our Mishnah's halacha, you'd see not like Rav Nachman. You have one guy is trying to remove these bricks from the other, because the other one has rights to it also, that we're splitting it between the two parties. And now one party wants to take it away from the other one by saying, I know these are my bricks. And the other one saying, I don't know. So you see that Bari B'Shem and Bari is Adav, not like Rav Nachman, even when the guy wants to take it away from the other party. And that says the Gemara, no. Could the Amar of Nachman, we could answer like the way Rav Nachman says elsewhere in a different context, that there's an additional component to this equation, that there was also a concept of an oath between the two of them, and therefore that's going to change the equation. Here also it's talking about where the other party, who's saying, I don't know, has already an obligation of an oath on them. As the Gemara explains, what is this halacha of a concept of an oath already that's there? Because the Rabbi, like Rabbi says, Rabbi explains the following type of a case. Mana li biyadcha. Again, which is like that case of Rav Nachman. If someone says to someone, there's a mana, $100 of mine by you. Now he doesn't say, I don't know on the whole thing. He says, look, I only know I owe you 50. The other 50 that you're claiming, I don't know. Oh, that says Rava in the explanation of Rav Nachman's halacha. Now, since he cannot swear on the other half, which he does have an obligation to swear, because that's the biblical halacha of Maid B'miktis, when the person makes a claim and the other person admits to half, then the other half that you're denying Even if he said straight out, no, I don't owe you, he would have to make a shvuah. Now that he says, I don't know, which doesn't make it any better, Yishalom has to go ahead and pay, because now you can't swear to make the shvuah maida mixes, because you don't really know. So that's the same thing over here in this halacha. It would be talking about, for example, in our Mishnah, when the other party is being maida mixes. In other words, the guy's claiming, these are my bricks. The other guy's not saying on the whole thing, I don't know. Rather, he's saying, oh, those half of those bricks, I agree, those are yours. The other half I don't know about. Oh, since he's already obligated in the biblical shvuah, because he was made to be mixed, he admitted to part of the bricks. Now it's the other part of the bricks that he's not admitting to, so you have to make a shvuah. Since he cannot make a shvuah, he can't swear that it's not that guy's because he really doesn't know. Therefore, the other person ends up taking it because now it's actually something that he should be doing, which he's not, which is the Shavuah. Since he can't live up to his part, the other guy could take all the bricks. Again, not because of Bari Vashem and Bari Adav. In actuality, if the other guy was totally Shem on everything, he would deny it, or say, I don't know the whole thing, the other person would not be allowed to take it. But since he already has a Chiv Shavuah, and now the Chiv Shavuah is his obligation, and that he's not fulfilling his obligation, that's why the other party could take all the bricks. And therefore that will resolve, even according to the halacha of Rav Nachman. Now the Mishnah concluded this halacha, so okay, this guy recognizes his bricks, and again, whether because of Bar B'Shem or because there's an Esek Shavuah B'Neim, he gets to take all the bricks he recognizes. The Mishnah said, Nava'ilis Le'mina Cheshbin. So we calculate that into the, meaning if no one had recognized anything, so then, 50-50, or whatever the proportion of their apartment was. His apartment was 60% of the building, his was 40, so he takes 60 and 40. Now here, someone's already taking away part of the pie, so that then gets calculated into the calculation. Oh, so you took already 10% of the building? So now this guy will take accordingly a different 10% of the pie that we're still going to split. So that, the Gemara tells us that Sava Rava Lameimer, Rava thought to say, that Lefi Cheshbin Shavurais, that according to the remaining debris, the broken bricks, that this guy's taking whole bricks now because he recognizes it, so that is something he's allowed to take because he recognized the whole. Now, according to what they would be splitting in the broken bricks, that now the other person is going to take that percentage of broken bricks, but not of whole bricks. That doesn't give him a right to take correlating whole, because to the contrary, this guy's recognizing whole, we're saying, okay, he has the upper hand. The broken bricks, which we're going to divide, okay, you don't get that proportion because you obviously took that proportion of whole bricks. Says the Gemara, Alma, Kivan the Amr any day. So what we see according to how Rav is interpreting the Mishnah, that since the other party said, I don't know, Reyat Fei, he has the lower hand. Since one guy is saying, I know these are my bricks, and he gets to take those bricks. And the other one is saying, I don't know. So because he doesn't know, he's losing out. Because now this guy gets to take whole bricks, and that comes off the other ones that he takes proportionately in broken bricks. Now on that, Amalei Abaye. Abaye asked to Rav, which the Rishonim point out that it's only in how he's questioning, although Abaye himself is not going to say like this, says, Adrabba, to the contrary, based on your logic, actually the claimant actually has the lower hand. Why? Midahani Yadav, and the fact that he recognizes these whole bricks, Tvei lo yada, and he doesn't know any more about the other whole bricks, Su Leslie, that means to tell us that he actually doesn't have any more whole bricks, because he's recognized, oh, that's mine, that's mine. How come you don't recognize those whole bricks? I wonder why. Because those are not yours. That tells us that actually all the other whole bricks actually belongs totally to the other party. So actually, he's losing out from recognizing only these. Actually, that's going to make the other party get the rest of the whole bricks. So Elam Abai, rather Abai gives a different interpretation of the Mishnah. It says it's Lefi Cheshbin Shleimais. The other party, he also takes whole bricks. Meaning, you're recognizing your whole bricks. We're going to split it evenly. Broken bricks. Whole bricks, whole bricks. Debris, debris. Wood, wood. Now, this guy, he recognized these bricks. Those are his whole bricks. Now, the other party will take proportionally in the other whole bricks. That the Gemara asks, Ihachi, but if that's the interpretation according to Abaye, so Maika Mahanile. What then does it benefit this guy by saying, oh, I recognize these my bricks? It doesn't make a difference. He's not gaining anything. Anyway, proportionally, the other guy's going to get whole bricks too. So what is he gaining? And the Mishnah is telling us like a Chiddush, oh, if he recognizes he could take it, what does he gain? Whether he recognizes or not, he's still going to get the same amount of whole bricks. So the Gemara knows there's two differences. One is lemubanad rafcha. There are certain bricks that are made like a block, which are wider than regular bricks. So although that they're going to split bricks, but since he's recognizing these are the larger type, and he's recognizing them, he gets to take those. So he is gaining by recognizing. Or inami, or another difference would be tina de mevda. There are certain types of cement which they would make the bricks out of, which are needed better and develop and process better than other bricks. So if he recognizes these as his bricks, which are the better quality bricks, he'll get that will be from his portion. So though they're splitting evenly anyway with the holes, but depending what type of bricks, that'll be gaining, and that's the halacha of the Mishnah, that if he recognizes it, he gets to keep those, and the other one, although he takes the equal portion according to Abaye of whole bricks, but the lower quality bricks the other guy gets. Mark continues with the next Mishnah, again continuing on the theme of these Mishnayos of Habayis V'Aliyah, where there's a first story and a second story in the building. Now, here Rashi points out the Girsa is not, as in the previous Mishnah, Shel Shnayim, of owned by two different people, because actually here we're talking about a case of a rental. As the Gemara will explain, that the upper story is actually was being rented out to someone else, but it's actually all owned by one person who lives on the first story. So the Mishnah says, Nifchasu Aliyah. If the second story, the upper story, caves in. Now, the Ein Bal Habayis, now the owner of the apartment, the one who's renting it out, doesn't want Reitz L'Sakan. He doesn't want to fix the upper story, doesn't want to invest. It's not worth it for me. It's going to cost too much for me to fix the upper apartment. Says the Mishnah, Hari Bal Aliyah, so the renter, the one who lives on the second story, could be Yerid V'Dor L'Mata. He could come downstairs and live on the first story in the apartment of the owner, until the balabayas, until the landlord fixes the second story. B'yisim, he says that hatach de nisin esatikra, the one that lives on the bottom floor, he has to fix his roof. Now ve'elyin esamaziva. Now the one who lives on the second story, he essentially fixes his floor, which is the layer on top of the first story's ceiling, which is this layer of cement which is put on the ceiling of the first story. And the Gemara will explain what's the machlokes between Rabbi Yosi and Tanakama, where what's the difference, what is the responsibility of the landlord who lives on this on the bottom floor. But Rabbi Yosi says that there is the ceiling of the first story, on that is the floor of the second story. That maziva, that layer, actually is not the responsibility of the balabais on the bottom floor. That's actually the responsibility of the second story, and he has to put that layer of plaster on his floor, which is the ceiling of the first floor. Now the Gemara first clarifies this halacha, the Mishnah, which was talking about that nifras aliyah, if the second story caved in. So the Gemara says, nifras abakama, how much of it caved in that gives him a right to now go and live on the bottom floor now? Rav Amai says, beruba. It's only if a majority of the second floor caved in, that the floor caved in, that he's allowed to go to the downstairs. Shmuel Amar, he says, no, barba, even if only four tfachim of the second story caved in, that gives him the right to go and live in the downstairs until it's fixed by the landlord. Now the Gemara explains the machlokes. Rav Amar Berubi says it's only if the majority of the floor caved in, ava barba lai, but if it's just four tfachim, then no, because essentially if it's just four tfachim of the upstairs floor that caved in, all he's really missing is a placement of, let's say, a dresser, something that goes in the area of four tfachim. Now, accordingly, whatever that area now that he can't keep that dress anymore, he could store that downstairs. And when he wants to use that item, then he could go downstairs and use it there. Because Adam Dar Chetzi Lamata V'Chetzi Lamala. Rav holds that a person could live partly upstairs and partly downstairs. So in other words, although that parts of his household items will be downstairs and the rest of his living will be upstairs, a person could do that. And that doesn't give him a right to now go ahead and now live in the downstairs building. Shmuel Amabarba, but Shmuel who said that, no, once it's already caved in just the area of four tfachim, that's where the halach of the Mishnah said he could go downstairs totally and live in the bottom floor, and that is we don't force him to live upstairs where half of his stuff is upstairs and half of it is downstairs, because he holds, Eino dem dar chatz lamata b'chatz lamala. A person can't live half upstairs, half downstairs. When I got to use my washing machine, suddenly I got to go to the downstairs apartment because where the washing machine was, the floor caved in, so I got to leave it on the first floor. Shmuel says a person can't do that, and therefore that already he could demand the rebuilding of his second floor, and if not, he lives on the first floor. Now the Gemara asks, Hei Chidami. Now the Gemara asks, however, on this halacha, the Mishnah, that said, whether like Rav or Shmuel, the majority, or four tfachim, that if it caves in, he could now live on the downstairs. So the Gemara asks, Hei Chidami, what's the case? And that is, Ida Amar Aliyah Zu, if the landlord had, when he rented out the second story, had said, here, I'm renting out to you this second floor. Now, once the second floor, you're right, it's non-usable anymore. With the four tfachim, the majority, now, so therefore, it's not a viable option anymore, so he can move downstairs. Another thing was, but if he told him, Aliyah Zu, this attic, well, Azda. So now it's not here anymore. You're right, it's not usable. But now that's the mazel, that's the portion of this renter. Because it was this attic, now it's not here anymore, so what do you want? I didn't rent you what's not here. So he could just tell him, so we'll go ahead and leave. That doesn't give him a right to now move into the bottom floor. Ella rather, the Amal Ali is Tam. So what do you tell him? No, I'm renting you a second floor. And if it's not there anymore because it caved in, so he could say, you owe me a second story. I'm going to live in your apartment. But if that's the case, then he should be allowed to rent him any second story if he has. So in other words, why does the Mishnah tell us that we force the landlord to have the guy who lives in the second story to live on his ground floor apartment? But why? If he told him, Aliyah Zoo, so there's no Aliyah Zoo. I only rented you Aliyah Zoo. And if Aliyah Stam, so he should be allowed to send him to any second story. Why does he have to have him come into his apartment on the ground floor? Samar Rabba says, no, Loit Sricha is told by the Amalei that the landlord had told him, Aliyah Zu Sha'ani Maskulach, this second story that I'm renting to you, Ki Salka, when it's still standing, Salak Bahada, then you go up and live on the second story. But V'chinachis, but if it comes down, meaning if it caves in, then Chavis Bahada, then you come down with it, meaning that you'll live on the ground floor with me. That's why it's Tomar Kez, although he said this one, but that's what he was guaranteeing. But if it caves in, then you can live in the ground floor. So the Gemara asks, Ehachem Alamemba, then what was the requirement of the Chiddush of our Mishnah? It's obvious, that's what he stipulated. He said, if it's up, you live there. If not, you come down. So Elam Rav Asher, rather Rav Asher gives a different interpretation. He says, the Amale, it's where the landlord had told him, Aliyah Zu Shal Gabi Bayezeh. This attic, this second story that's on top of this house, Ani Maskelach, that's what I'm renting to you. Since he used those words, the Hashabid Bayis Laliyah, essentially, he then indebted the ground floor to the second story. Because if he wasn't indebting the bottom floor, then why did he say that Shal Gabi Bayezeh, that's on top of this ground floor? Well, we have eyes, we see. He said this attic. Obviously, this attic, this second story, is on top of this ground floor. Why did he add on that's on top of this bayis? Those words indicate that because it's responsible for the second story, and that is if the second story caves in, then you could go down to the ground floor. As the Gemara brings, V'chihad Amar Rav and Baravad Amar B'Yitzchak. And he said that Ma'isa Be'echad Sh'amal Chaveri, there was an incident with someone who told to his friend, Dulles, which are the vines that hang on other things, that's how the vines are generally, Shal Gabi Parsigzeh said that this grapevine, which is hanging on top of this peach tree, Ani Meichelach, I'm selling you these vines. Now, the Nekar passing, the story went on, is that the peach tree got uprooted. There was no more peach tree anymore. Now, this story came in front of Chia, and he said, you have to provide for him another peach tree. Kolzman, Shadolas Kayam, as long as the vines are still around, why did you say that's on top of this peach tree? That's the same halacha Rav Asher is explaining for our Mishnah. Since you said that's on top of this peach tree, although you really only sold them the grapevines, but you said on top of the peach tree, so you're indebting the peach tree to the grapevines, and therefore you're responsible to provide for the peach tree that the vines could hang on top of that. That's the same thing over here. Why did you say Aliyah Zu Shal Gabi Bayezeh? Oh, because even though you're renting just the second floor, but you're indebting the bottom floor for that, and that's why if it caves in, he can go to the bottom floor.